sent from Saigon on 18 February 1964. I thought, Jimmy, that on the chance that you may have found an IBM machine by now, I'd go ahead and send you another disk to keep you informed about the happenings around here. It looks as if things are getting fairly hot. Yesterday, Major Kreis was having a haircut in the French barber shop just across the street, and he ran into Francois Sully, who is Newsweek's correspondent here in Vietnam. He is pretty much all over the place, and we seem to run into him every other day or so. During their conversation at the barber shop, Francois indicated that he fully expected a full-scale bloody coup by this weekend. I'm hoping it'll hold off a little longer than that. While we were in the Haiyan sector down on the southern Mekong, Father Hua indicated that he thought that there would undoubtedly be a full-scale coup with all the fireworks before the end of April or May, though he didn't foresee anything serious in the immediate future. I expect that his sources of information are somewhat better than those of Francois Sully. There seems to be an expected campaign against Americans by the VC here in Saigon, and General Khan has suggested that a committee be formed to establish the best means of protecting Americans. The blowing up of the Capitol Kindo Theater was what brought this all on. The risk around here, however, I think is still essentially minimal. If you just don't stick your neck out unnecessarily, the Kindo Theater was the only U.S.-operated theater in the vicinity and was a pretty obvious target. As a result, I never frequented the Kindo, although a sergeant from our office was seriously injured on the incident of Sunday night. For a while, I was a little concerned about the possibility that maybe our hotel would be bombed for the simple reason that it is one of the very few hotels that is manned almost entirely by Americans and yet is not guarded. I asked my room servant, Juan, about this, and he says that there isn't a chance for a quite simple reason. It appears that whether or not you get bombed is determined by whether or not you pay taxes to the Viet Cong. The Alfana pays taxes to the VC. Juan is Chinese, having been a refugee from China into North Vietnam. When North Vietnam came under the control of the communists, Juan fled into South Vietnam. Juan thinks that the attempt of most Americans to distinguish between the Vietnamese and the VC is absolutely ridiculous and quite humorous. He says, Vietnamese, VC, same, same. Then he quickly adds, me Chinese. The tax situation is a quite simple reason why it's very hard for the local governments to get any control over the rural areas. Almost all the rural people pay taxes to the VC, since the VC are in control of the rural areas almost all of the time, and particularly at night. Since the rural people cannot avoid paying taxes to the VC, it is pretty hard for them to get excited about paying taxes also to the recognized Vietnamese government. In the eyes of most of the peasants in the rural areas, the best government is no government at all, since very few of them have benefited to any extent from any government. The only time they hear about any government is when someone comes around to collect taxes. Since they don't want to pay taxes twice, the easiest thing for them to do is to pay taxes only to the VC and resist attempts of the recognized government to obtain control over the rural areas. Of course, many of these peasants who are resisting attempts of the recognized government to gain control are not communists in any sense, but simply sensible peasants who are looking for the best way to avoid paying taxes twice. Today we headed out to a compound a few miles from the town of Benhoa, B-I-E-N-H-O-A, which is about 20 miles west of Saigon, the distance to which is spanned by a U.S.-built superhighway. The highway is pretty secure by day due to heavy military traffic, but it is considered impassable by night. About 10 miles out of Saigon, there's a beautiful housing development that was built by the U.S. for the Vietnamese. However, nobody lives there because of VC harassment. Some of the areas that we visit are reminiscent of the Cane Mutiny situation. One U.S. compound, controlled by a U.S. colonel and staffed by American personnel, works a 7-day week, 12 hours a day, with no time off. Needless to say, say the commanding officers who see us coming into such a unit are quite upset by our presence. I find myself in the situation of sort of spying on the commanding officers of such areas. Usually I can find an intelligent enlisted man who has a good idea of what's going on. The best source of information for me is the college graduate, short-term soldier like myself in these areas, who finds himself in a hellhole and is perfectly willing to talk about it without much hesitation. I find myself trying to skirt around some slightly classified information as I dictate this. One of the official opinions that I've heard reflected around here is that the Vietnamese and the VC have a dual headquarters somewhere out in the jungle region to the northwest of Saigon. It is felt that at these headquarters, the Vietnamese and VC determine who's going to win the battles of the day. The primary aim of this headquarters is to see to it that the U.S. dollar keeps flowing in, since it is profitable to the VC and the Vietnamese alike. As Juan says, same, same. Francois Sully is preparing an article for Newsweek dealing with, quote, the positive and negative aspects of the situation in Vietnam, end quote. When asked what the positive aspects were, Francois Sully commented that the economy was booming. This seemed paradoxical for some reason to Francois Sully, since there is a war going on. Francois, Major Christ comments, is obviously not very much of an economist. I had breakfast with Dr. Hickey again yesterday, and contrary to Tony Lake's comments, Dr. Hickey feels that Tony is getting the raw end of the stick. Tony's official position, Dr. Hickey explained to me, is that of protocol officer for the ambassador. Dr. Hickey feels that this job is avoided whenever possible by more senior members of the State Department and Foreign Service, and that it is usually foisted upon young officers such as Tony. When I asked Tony the other day about what he thought the future was for Vietnam as far as U.S. aid was concerned, he felt that in all probability there was very little chance of the U.S. pulling out, and that the question of the moment was primarily whether or not to increase the U.S. commitment or maintain the present level. The idea of an increase in U.S. commitment, of course, probably means another Korea-type situation. I find myself getting better and better adapted to this particular sort of mission as I grow to understand better and better what we are after. The other night I really blew my stack to Majors Sweeney and Christ because of the feeling of lack of direction for this study. As time goes on, the study is beginning to seem more and more sensible. Last night I sat with Major Sweeney as he got thoroughly plastered and listened to him ventilate. Slowly, more and more rapport is developing among the four of us team members. So there have been some pretty substantial blocks, which I can't describe on this tape, but will when I get back. All of us at one time or another have had some pretty strong reactions to this situation, most of them taking the form of some apparent physiological ailment. Major Sweeney was quite sick for a while and got that way almost immediately upon his arrival here in Saigon. The same happened to Major Christ and Chuck Falkingham. Nothing happened to me for about 2 weeks till I came down with the Saigon cold or flu or whatever. And then a couple of days later, I was sitting reading a report, and all of a sudden I noticed that my pulse rate was going up tremendously and that my hands were getting all splotchy and red. I walked to the bathroom and removed my shirt to find my whole body covered with bright red splotches the size of silver dollars. It seemed it was simply an allergy reaction, or so it seemed, though I've never had any such allergy reaction, and Dr. Sweeney felt quite convinced that this reaction, like most allergy reactions, had a very substantial emotional base. Fortunately, the next morning the whole thing was gone, and in fact the Saigon flu was pretty much gone also, so I'm enjoying good health again. As the situation grows hotter and hotter, our outlook toward future missions into the field is growing more and more sober. Major Christ admits that he has not the slightest desire to get his ass shot off in defense of the Republic of Vietnam, and the rest of us find it pretty hard to get very excited about the idea also. From the standpoint of information gathered, I'd say that the mission is essentially perhaps three-quarters completed. The only thing left to do that has to be done is to get out into some Special Forces A detachments. Nobody has done that yet. But we have gotten out and seen MedCap teams in operation in the field, been present on battalion operations, been to many, many MAG compounds and other U.S. installations, and have a very good idea of what sort of research should go on in later phases of this Southeast Asia project. Dr. David McKay Riok, a GS-18 from Walter Reed and chief of the Department of Neuropsychiatry, whose rank equivalent is that of a three-star general, and who is in charge of this project, is coming out here on March 3rd to be briefed by the team. Unless he comes up with something else that he feels should be done along the lines of research, we will probably be heading home soon after that. Major Kreiss and Specialist Falkingham will be going home on the 4th of March since their 90-day TDY period is up at that time. Major Sweeney and I could stay on until about the 10th of April, but hopefully we will be coming home a good deal sooner than that. If I were to venture a guess, I would suppose that we'll probably be coming home around the 20th or 25th, say, of March. I received a note from Mother saying that she'd already received four rolls of movie film, so she hasn't had a chance to look at it because she doesn't know how to operate the projector. She said that she was going to get Billy Ellison to come over and work it for her. I expect that by now at least 8 or 10 rolls have come in, developed. Let me know if you get a chance to look at them. Major Kreiss just returned from the Rex Hotel, which is the primary billeting hotel for U.S. officers. The word is out that the Rex is going to be bombed this evening, and they've doubled the guard, and everybody over there seems to be a little bit on edge. Major Kreiss and I just walked out on the balcony of the Alfana, and we noticed that the streets are incredibly quiet at this hour. It's just after midnight. Major Kreiss's gauge of the situation is a number of streetwalkers on the corners of this crossroads on Tudo. The number at this time of night is usually ranges between 5 and 7, being fairly steady. At the moment, it is down to 1, which is a very bad sign, though the 1 there seems to be a pretty cute number. I just talked to Major Kreiss also about the land situation and the tax situation for the peasants. It also is true, apparently, that the peasants, in most cases, are living on the land of relatively wealthy landowners who center in the urban areas. When the local government obtains control over the rural lands, then the landowners can get out to collect their taxes, which is 50% of the product of the local peasant rice growers. Then the government tax is approximately 20 to 25% of the produce. The result is that if the government gets in and the landowners get out to collect their taxes, the peasant loses about 70 to 75% of his crop in many cases. If, on the other hand, the VC maintains control over the area, then the peasant loses only approximately 20% of his crop. Thus, there is a fairly substantial economic reason for the peasant to be in favor of the VC control. Things are just as quiet as a mouse around here this evening. I think I'll go out and check on the situation again. I don't know whether the quietness is due to possible VC activity or a possible coup. During our trip today, we noticed a large number of troops moving into Saigon, but we don't know why they were moving in. Perhaps there is some basis to Francois Sully's suspicion that there will be a coup within the next day or two. I'll let you know by belt what happens. Over and out for now.